You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
This looks delicious.
Thank you. I think I might have overcooked the lamb a little bit, but I'm
sure it's fine. I think you might have been right about the lamb.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
I checked it twice when it was in the oven, and I think it might be hotter than it says that it is.
No. I don't think this is working out. It's not you. It's me.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello. Have you missed me?
I have missed you. Because we were supposed to podcast yesterday, so I definitely missed you. We are here to talk about Gotham, Season 1, Episode 19, Beasts of Prey. And I got to tell you, Alex, I've been naming most of the episodes this season after a song.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost didn't name this episode anything because the song didn't come to me. So it was just going to be Beasts of Prey. But then there was this one little line that came up that I went, huh, that's perfect. Because it even ties into the rant that I have about the show. I'm not even going to say this episode. And the title that I'm calling this episode is It's Not You, It's Me.
Oh, when I heard it, that's exactly what I thought.
Because when you hear somebody say, it's not you, it's me, it is you.
Mm.
They're just trying to be nice. And this is something that I want to say to the executives at Fox. So this rant isn't even really about this episode. It's about the fact that, okay, a long time ago, like 10 years or so or more, and I don't know if it was this way in Europe, TV shows were very much contained. You could miss a few episodes and come back in. The arcs connecting them were pretty minor. They were pretty much standalone episodes. And so you had things premiere in September and then end in May and had umpteen repeats in between just randomly throughout the whole mm-hmm. season. And that's how it was actually on the first season of Lost. Oh, she did it again. She just lost into it. And the fans really hated it because around that time, and it wasn't just Lost, but you know, a lot of shows started really going into not these mini arcs connecting, but where you really did need to see every episode to follow the storyline. And I know I was one of those fans that I'm like, you know, having like three new episodes and then three repeats just really threw you off. And so they really fought and eventually moved to having it where you, well, first they did where they did a big break in the middle, which a friend of mine called a donut season because it had a hole right in the middle of the season. And I thought that was actually a good description. But then they went to premiere and just new episodes straight through. And it was a blessing. Oh my gosh, this was such a blessing because when you started watching, you knew where it ended. Fox has done this before because 24 did this. Where they stopped starting in September. They started in January and went straight through to May, and you never had a repeat.
Yeah.
Gotham is on Fox. Gotham is a new series. Gotham premiered, what was it, last September? Isn't that when we started? And went through and did a mid-season finale, winter finale, in December, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was off for just 4 weeks, which we were like, oh my God, like I remember... Alex, we have an episode tomorrow night that we have to watch and podcast on. They're back early. They come back for one episode. Then they take another break and then come back. And then they go through till the beginning of March and take another 6 weeks off. We had a spring break. I honestly almost didn't care about this episode because it felt like we had the season finale 6 weeks ago. And it really affected how I watched this episode.
Well, frankly, I almost didn't remember that Gotham is back. You had to remind me. And then I acted like I remembered all along because, of course, I remembered. Nope. No, I did not remember.
Yeah, no.
And come on, I can understand the break for holidays, right? Or
right.
The way Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did it this year. Like, taking a break for 6 weeks or more to have Agent Carter in.
Which was a donut season. They basically did a donut season and filled it with a companion piece kind of thing.
And that was awesome.
And I like that. That's fine. They stayed away for a nice long time. It was a nice break.
Yeah, but... And they... You have to admit that they finished... They had a strong mid-season finale. It felt like a mid-season finale. Right? And when they came back, it was like, okay, season 2B, let's call it that. And other shows I know do it as well. Well, you know, shows I watch really a lot. And Gotham is like, you know, stop, start, start, stop, stop, wait. What am I watching? Where am I? Am I watching it?
Yeah.
It was like, it's so confusing.
I really didn't care.
This is the problem. I really don't care about Gotham enough to pay attention to the changes in the schedule.
Well, especially when that last episode, we really felt like it felt like a season finale. It had that season finale cliffhanger moment. I mean, you even commented, because Alex has started doing reviews of the second half of Outlander, first season. And you even commented in there, and I have Doreen, one of our fellow chicks, even commented, well, I have season one of Outlander on my DVR. I'm just waiting for season two. I'm like, no. You have the first half of season one. The second half starts now, like you said, I think in your post, like it feels like it's been a million years.
And it's been 6 months.
That seems like more. I mean, I thought that was a huge break, but when it came back, I was okay with it because it felt like it was the start of a whole new thing. This, for the finale we got 6 weeks ago, this was not a comeback from that episode. And I'm like, and we only have three more after this? I don't get this. This actually was more of a letdown to me than Next Generation's Best of Both Worlds parts 1 and 2, because part 1 was the most awesome cliffhanger ever, and part 2 was one of the weakest comeback. But that was actually a season finale and a season premiere. This is just, we're going on spring break for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Why?
It just really ruined it.
I honestly don't understand why they chose to do it like this instead of, you know, taking a longer break and then coming back with the episode we had 6 weeks ago, you know, and going straight through. It's just Fox is just, it's like they know how to make TV. They know how to make good TV shows and how to get the audience to pay attention. But when they get a genre show, right? It's like the whole knowledge they have of marketing and scheduling and production disappears. And what? And I have this overwhelming need to scream at the screen, something I do rarely, but I have this overwhelming need to scream, what is wrong with you? And when the character said the line, it's not you, it's me, I had such a meta moment. Like,
exactly.
Oh my god, this. For a while, I wondered, why didn't they name the episode after that line? It didn't have to be that particular line, but I don't know, something about a breakup, or I don't know. It just...
Something. Well, and especially when they ended November 24th. I have it right in front of me with Lovecraft. But that had the assassins attacking Wayne Manor. And then we went on break for like 40 days, you know, and came back with Rogues Gallery, where we introduce Leslie Tompkins. So we have Morena come on. And then we have a break for a week. And then we come back and do, you know, more episodes basically up through March 2nd with Everyone Has a Cobblepot. And you have that great ending and come back to this. This didn't feel like a comeback episode. If they had waited that 10 weeks in between Lovecraft with the assassins attacking Wayne Manor and came back and went straight through with Rogues Gallery through to the end, I think the second half of the season would have had a bigger impact. But it really disappointed me. This episode disappointed me, and I don't even know if it's because of the episode or because I'd already lost my interest in it. I mean, that last scene, let's go ahead and move into the next part here. That last shot that we had of Fish looking out of the window and pulling back and seeing that not only is she, has she been kidnapped, she's been held as a prisoner down there, they're taking body parts, she's taken her eye out, she has a new eye that's totally different colors, and now we're pulling back and finding out that she's trapped on this island. If we had gone straight from that last week to this episode this week, I think it would have been better, and it would have been better because in these 6 weeks, we also found out that Jada Pinkett Smith has announced Fish Mooney is not coming back for season two. Now, I've been reading a lot of comments online, and there's a lot of people that are fine with that. But the way that it was announced, the way that she announced it, it's during this break. We still have 4 more episodes to go. Fish went from somebody I was interested in to now I'm like, okay, well, how are you going to do her in? What's going to happen? She's gone. Clock's a ticking on her. Yeah. And it really took away, I think, a big impact that this episode could have had. And the series, this whole season could have had with Fish and why she's there. Now it feels like I've wasted my time ever caring about Fish.
Yeah, because everybody who listens to our podcasts will know that Fish is the one character, aside from Butch, but that's connected, that we absolutely love and gush about and always talk about. And every podcast, it's Fish this and Fish that. And she's so awesome. And now, yeah, she's going to die. I know it for sure. I mean, the moment there was this moment in this episode when Fish was talking about her death, like she's not going to die or what she gonna do, you know? And I was like, that is so ironic right now. I don't even, I can't even. And instead of this scene being intense, it was funny. Because, yeah, she's going to die, and now it's a matter of time of, and how. It's not a when or if, it's how. Because, yeah, this is not the kind of character who, you know, not dies and has a happy ending.
Yeah, is she going to have a meaningful death? Is it going to be meaningful? Is it going to be just nothing, throwaway? I mean, I think of like Game of Thrones with that first season and how Sean Bean was on for one season. People still talk about him and talk about that and how his character went out and the impact that that character being beheaded, sorry, spoilers, if you're that far behind on Game of Thrones, had on the entire plot line. And, I mean, you have things like Christopher Eccleston just did the one season on Doctor Who. Whether that was arranged beforehand, whether it happened during the season, you know, whatever it happened, it did it in such a way that here's two characters that it made an impact. I don't know if, did something happen when the season got elongated and, or did something happen on set, something with negotiations that Jada wasn't happy and so she's leaving, they're not happy, so they're kicking her out, they always intended. It makes me think that her character is a stunt now.
Yeah. It does feel like casting her, because when you look at the cast, Jada is one of the bigger names on there.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, up until Gotham, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Well, I knew Ben McKenzie, but that's because I watched Southland, like, religiously.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, everybody else on there, I knew them because I've seen them before, but I didn't like them to a point where I knew their name. You know, hey, I know you. You look familiar. Yeah. I've seen you. But it wasn't, I wouldn't... In our first podcast, I wouldn't be able to tell you their names, aside from Jada Pinkett Smith and Ben McKenzie. That's all, you know?
See, I knew Donald Logue, but I don't know that he would have been the one that would make me intrigued with the show to want to tune in. And I'll tell you what has me worried, and we are going to get to talking about the episode actually here in a second, but something that has me worried now is the female character aspect of this. Montoya has been absent forever. Barbara is going to be coming back in because of what's happening with the ogre character, but we'll talk about that at the end. But that's not necessarily a strong female character potential that we have. We don't have the supervillains that we have are in training with Ivy and Kat. So we have two female kid future supervillains. Most everybody else, and that Morena, she's very strong, but she is really still a supporting
character. She's a love character interest, in first all this. And foremost. Which, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I love her, but she's not this main driving force. She's that great sidekick, but not a main driving force. All the other villains and good guys are men. And I'm not a canon expert or anything, but the fact that Fish was an original character, I think really did add something to it because it gave a freedom to what her character could do. She wasn't tied to any preconceived notions about what she's supposed to do. And if she's gone, however she goes, if she dies, if she just retires to some great island in the Maldives, whatever. She goes over to the Marvel Universe. I don't care. But we have this huge absence because I don't know of another canon, historical canon character that would be female, that would be of that general age bracket, because everybody that I know of is somehow a contemporary of Bruce's, which means they would be a Cat or an Ivy. And Jade is not old, but she is not a Cat or an Ivy. She's a contemporary that could deal with not only Penguin and Jim, but with Maroni and Falcone and really hold her own against Dahlmacher. I don't know of another canon character that when Batman is up and going is maybe in her 60s. I don't know of anybody else that's going to fill that. So do we bring in another new character to fill her place that's a female? Or do we have a lack of a strong female adult lead?
Here's the thing. Because if they decide to replace Fish with another adult female character, like you said, that character is going to get so much unreasonable, in a way, hate, because she's going to be a replacement and she's going to feel like a replacement. And whoever gets that role is going to have such a difficult task in making that character likable. Because everybody and their uncle is going to compare that character, that Lady X, let's call her, to Fish. And no matter what they come up with and who they cast, that new character is always going to fall flat. Because Fish, Mooney, and Jada Pinkett Smith. So I don't know, but at the same time, they can't bring in a guy to take over the dynamic and the possible storyline that Fish would have gotten in season two, because that's going to enrage a lot of people, me included.
Well, and that, like I said, there's people out there that don't like Fish that are ready for her to go. A lot of, you know, some may be some diehard DC people or just in general don't like what it is. But just taking her out and putting in another adult female, like you said, she's still at a disadvantage because now she's the second of somebody that you don't like. And so has he, you know, you now have to surpass what Jada Pinkett Smith was doing.
Good luck with that.
And, you know, go far and away. So it's like you have the deck stacked against you. But yeah, if you bring in another guy, all the supervillains are guys. All the mobsters are guys. Everybody is a guy except for these future
and Montoya, who's
barely villains
there.
In training. And Montoya. Yeah, and even if you bring Montoya and Barbara up more, they're technically on the good guy side. We don't have a strong female villain. And in this day and age, I think you really need that in something like this. You need that balance. And so I'm actually scared and not looking forward to where this could go.
Yeah, but then again, look at it this way, because with the exit of Jada Pinkett Smith, Gotham is going to have even bigger problem, because look at the diversity that they have, or, you know, they don't have. Like you said, practically everybody's a guy. Practically everybody's white. And everybody's straight. Well, except for the disappearing lesbians that we already ranted about. So what Gotham is doing, and hey, maybe it's not all on Gotham and the writers. Maybe Jada is the reason why Jada is leaving, because she decided that way. But Gotham is slowly losing points. And we weren't so thrilled and in love with it in the first place. So I'm just, you know how websites that cover TV often have those shows on a bubble posts where they list shows that have uncertain futures and that network haven't picked up yet. I'm pretty sure that if we ever had a post with podcasts on a bubble, Gotham is right there. Because I gotta tell you, it's not looking very interesting.
Yeah, I was okay with it, but like I said, the fact that the way they announced Fish, it doesn't have me excited for these final four episodes. And the last three better be stellar to make me really care. Because it almost seems like they don't. Like, again, maybe the extra episodes were not a blessing for them. Maybe they shouldn't have gotten them. Maybe somebody should have said no and gone down. Okay, we are 23 minutes in. Let's go ahead and actually talk about the episode. And let's start with Fish, since we were talking about Jada. She has got her new eyes. She's got her nice little white suit and her head wrap and is trying to break out of the island from the Dollmaker. And go ahead. Let's go ahead and talk about Fish and her breakout.
Well, I liked it. I liked the way she executed it, because first she did recon, you know, check things out, and at the beginning she had an excuse for every perceived mistake. Like, she went out to see how easy it would be to get to the chopper, or wherever, and she came across the security detail with the really weird guy who clearly doesn't wash his hair. Instead, just wears a hat. Come on, it's not a zombie apocalypse. You do not have the same excuse Daryl Dixon has. Wash your hair, people. Otherwise, it looks disgusting. Anyway, and she meets him and she gives him this excuse and plays it cool, like, no, I wasn't trying to escape. Like, really? I'm the new assistant. Yeah, I'm, you know, look at me, I'm harmless and not plotting at all. And then when she goes to the Dollmaker's office, she also, you know, has one excuse, it doesn't pan out. She has another excuse, it doesn't pan out, and she goes with a third excuse, which was, by the way, really good, because, yeah, that guy would give you nightmares.
Well, it's when he does that whole thing, like, you'd rather take your own life than become a creation. And when she's talking, because I agree with her, when she started doing that whole thing, it's like, I don't want to become that freaky little psycho Barbie doll that he created. And I thought that was believable. I think she really didn't want to. She already knew that he was fine with replacing parts. He gave her, you know, a new eye, but, so I think that was, I don't know if she had that pre-planned or if that just came out off the top of her head.
He wanted to hear
the truth. But it was
great. He wanted to hear the truth, and she gave him one. It wasn't necessary the truth of why she was there, you know, but it was true.
Exactly.
So that was really nicely planned. And then the way she engineered the destruction and everything, I was like, Fish, darling, yes, you are in charge, you make plans, and you know the rules of the game. then you will survive.
Something I think...
Well, not really, but you can dream of surviving.
Something I think would have been good, I almost wish that we had gotten fish to be captured much earlier in the season, even just a few episodes more, because I think I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of her and Dahlmacher working together, because the thing that did disappoint me, well, like I said, I like what she was doing, but it didn't have as big of an impact, I think, because I knew fish is going bye-bye. But the thing that really disappointed me in the whole story was the same thing that kind of disappointed us with going back to Dr. Crane, going back to Gruber, where we had this great lead up of here's this really creepy bad guy. I mean, I remember that with Gruber getting out and how that ending shot was just, this is awesome. And then the next episode, we're like, wah, you know, it didn't pan out. Here you have that great scene with Fish and Dahlmacher, where she actually calls him the doll maker too. Yeah. I mean, we've now had Fish name him. We've had Fish name the supervillain, and seeing how he would shoot her, he would have taken her down. And then go to when she's escaping, and it seems kind of scary. And then the thugs just kind of beat him up and leave him there, and he looks like he's a crying little boy. Yeah. I was just like, really? Are we taking down another super creepy supervillain that easily? Like we did with Julian Sands, like we did with Christopher Heyerdahl, are we just screwing with their potential? That kind of fell flat to me.
The same time, it kind of, you know, emphasizes the problem the Gotham writers have. They have this really intense lead up that doesn't pay off. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's their problem of, hey, we used so many awesome characters. How do we, you know, survive till the end of the season without the evil characters taking over? And how much of it is basically, we want to be writing about the Batman, but Batman's, well, underage and isn't even legal to drive a car. What do we do? And it's like, I don't know, it kind of feels disappointing, and it's just piling, the stuff that I'm disappointed about, it just keeps piling up.
Well, and I'm kind of scared of where this is going to go, because we ended it with something that you celebrated, where we thought that Fish basically killed Kelly, Butch number two. And you were like, yay, because he doesn't deserve to be a Butch. Well, Kelly's not dead. She did keep him, and she's still loyal to him. And so we're seeing Fish's, and Alex is just grimacing at me. Really? You're bringing up Kelly? She doesn't want to talk about Kelly. But the reason I'm bringing it up is we see that she has this loyalty to her surrogate Butch. This is the closest I can come to Butch in the circumstances I am. And she is loyal to them. It even looks, she didn't kill him. It looked like she was going to throw him aside for those big six hulky guys, even though she's one that set them up. And she escapes with Kelly, and Kelly can fly her off the island and all this kind of stuff. And she gets shot. I'm scared now that she's got this loyalty, that because Kelly is like a Butch. Mm. He's not Butch, but he's like a Butch. And I have a bad feeling that they're going to turn this around, and the way Fish is going to go is going to have something to do with Butch and Butch turning. And I have a bad feeling that Fish is going to die because of a betrayal like that. Mm. And I don't like that.
Me either. I don't know how to put it. I have this feeling, and I don't know how to put it into words. So forgive me my lack of wit on this particular occasion, but if she goes out because of a betrayal, like you're describing, it's going to have really, really bad visual. Because it's going to be a woman of color being put down and killed by a white guy, and I'm not comfortable with it.
Who she trusted, and who last she saw was sacrificing himself for her.
Basically, and...
And now he's going
to
betray
that's
him.
Going to... I can bet you a lot that if they really go that way, it's going to set up that secondary character. And if it's Butch, it's Butch. But if it's Kelly, I'm not going to be happy. But that secondary character that's going to betray her, I can bet you anything that the writers will use that to elevate him to a bigger status and set up a redemption arc,
yeah,
or some sort of evil, you know, equivalent of a redemption arc in season two. And I'm going to be so angry, so mad, that you're going to have to find another podcasting partner for Gotham, because I will refuse to have
at least for the show.
If they really go with a betrayal and then, you know, promote the guy to regular or something like that. Oof.
Okay, well, let's not get started down there even more. We've been spending a lot of time ranting.
I know.
Let's move on to the guys that we've been ranting about. let's real quick. We've been talking about Butch. Let's move into the whole Penguin and Butch thing real quick. I have a feeling this is going to be really fast. So Penguin has found a place to kill Don Maroney. He has plans. Penguin has plans. Finally.
And I would be excited about Penguin having plans if he didn't have a history of having plans and then following them up with rookie mistakes after they've been executed perfectly. So, yay, Penguin has a plan, and I'm going to sit here and watch him being, you know, bit in the bum by said plan. Because that's how it's going to end.
I hope not, because I like when Penguin has a plan and actually follows through.
No, come on. This is the pattern we've seen before. This episode was Penguin taking a step forward. Next episode will be an episode where Penguin takes two steps back. Because that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. I know. But I'm hopeful because we've had so many times that we've just really loved Penguin. And I'd like to see him get back to that, and at least maybe it would help get Butch back, because at the Drew Powell, we still love our Butch, even though we're scared about what you might be doing.
We do love Butch.
This does mean that we might be losing Maroney. Maybe we're taking Maroney out, thinning the mobster herd a little bit. Fish is going, and Maroney is on the chopping block as well, so that might just leave us with Falcone. We might not have Falcone anymore.
But come on, it's too early for Penguin to be the main mobster in town. What are we going to get? Another Lovecraft? Like a stand-in? I don't know. It's like, Gotham writers, please, I don't know, make plans for, you know, that plans that make sense.
I will say something that I do like about Penguin in this episode is we had just enough of him that he looked like he was the Penguin we wanted to be. It's not like we were filling the episode with all sorts of things just to fill the episode with more Penguin. It was short. It was concise.
It had the
menace. It had a point. He had the menace. He had the plan. He even had the little bit of comic timing in him walking down the street while Bruce is at the gun range. So I like the little crossover because it was a little hee. With that, let's go ahead and move into Bruce and Alfred and Reg and Cat, because they kind of all go in together. I like Bruce being so nervous at the beginning because he knows what he needs to do. And I think he's a little scared to do it. Even cutting the bread too thick when he's with Jim. And watching Alfred, you know, trying to get... Alfred's got to go out and find Rich. And I love it. Love it when he's like, you're bleeding. He's like, oh, dear. She's like, yeah, Alfred, oh, dear. Can I say, Alfred sure is taking a long time to recover from that stabbing, whereas Fish did really well with that eye transplant.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm digressing.
But come on.
Stay on target, Heather.
I love that we got Alfred back. And I like the way, you know, they might have not dressed it in those words exactly, but I like the scene with Alfred that said, "You think you're going to go out and find Reg? Think mm-hmm. again." I enjoyed it because exactly. I really thought that he would be completely recovered, like fish, after the eye transplant. And yeah, I'm going to go fight mm-hmm. crime or Reg in this particular case. But no, he was just there to do what Alfred does best. Show Bruce struggle. In, you know, mm-hmm. in a way he has to handle the world. Alfred less Bruce was the most amazing and emotional Bruce I've seen since the show started. Mm-hmm. And since I've seen Bruce Wayne in any movie or cartoon. Because he was a scared little boy who was trying to be a brave little toaster. And I can totally cut bread and, you know, invite guests into the manor, and I can totally handle this. But no, he can't. No, he can't. He needs Alfred. Yeah. He needs Alfred, and he needs Alfred's stat. My heart went out to Bruce, really. David Mazouz, mm-hmm. Who plays him, he's just... I want to hug him, basically. And that's one step away from wanting to adopt him, because he's just so precious. So precious.
It was really nice, because it was a very fragile side of Bruce. Because he's scared. I can't lose Alfred. He really is all I have left. He came that close. And I think even in the panic that he had when Alfred was stabbed, even being by his bedside in please, oh, please, oh, please, don't die, yeah. don't die. You're caught in that kind of moment. He's now in a place where he can see if something happens to Alfred, I am totally alone. And it scares him, and it's rocking him to his core. And it's also the motivation he has to actually get out there and yeah. do something. Not that we're advocating 13-year-olds going out to gun ranges to look for anybody, or shooting galleries, or the wild city streets. We're not advocating that. But this is the future Batman, and this is what he's supposed to be doing, and taking that on. And he's now moving into where Alfred is not his safe zone. Alfred is the other part of him. He now has to protect Alfred just as much as Alfred has to protect him. And I like that. And seeing that vulnerability in him was really nice.
The way...
And yet still the innocence. I love that moment. Mm-hmm. When he runs into Kat, well, Kat finds him, and he's talking about going to a shooting gallery and is in the gun ranges, and she's just like, oh, you sweet little thing.
You sweet summer child.
Not what a shooting gallery is. I was just ready for her to go, aren't you? I just like pinch his cheek. You're just so cute. You're so cute and innocent.
Yeah. No. Come on. What I loved about Kat's entrance was that they showed her mm-hmm. in the background doing that little acrobatic thing.
Uh-huh.
I loved it. I was like, yes, Kat, you're awesome. Please come back. But I gotta tell you, when they were investigating and looking for Reg, and when they finally found him, my canoe was back. And
we were canoeing.
I was so much. There was canoeing all the way from here to Dallas, which is, you know, 7 time zones. So there was a lot of canoeing. But I have to tell you, I loved the way they worked together.
I think that these two actors have kind of found their pattern, their rhythm with each other really well. Starting even back when she first comes, it's like, you need to get out more. And it's just so cute. It's like they've fallen into a good rhythm where they make a good pair. And they're now, I want to see them in 10 years' time. when they're older and see them playing opposite each other, because I think they found that good pattern. And it's, I was canoeing right from the beginning. And how she stood up for him, I like that she's showing, he keeps saying that Alfred is all he has left, but Jim has shown him that he's there for him. Kat is showing that too, when she's just like, you know, my friend just asked you a question, when they're confronting Reg. She's standing up for him. She's sticking there. She's showing this. And I really like these two together.
Mm.
I was sad to see Reg go, I have to admit, because I think the actors is very good. But the way they did it also, I think, really set up the future Batman-Catwoman dynamic. He wanted to. His hands are there. He's ready to push Reg out. But he just can't go that extra 6 inches to actually do it. And she can.
But watching her, look at Reg, look at Bruce, see that Bruce can't do what has to be done. Because I think both Bruce and Kat, without speaking about it, knew that Reg would remain a danger to them. Danger to Alfred, danger to Bruce. And they couldn't have that, because Bruce is already in such a, you know, delicate place with everybody being out for out to get him.
And danger to what she started building as well, because she started building her own broken family, but still a family now. People that she trusts and cares for in Bruce and Alfred and to an extent Jim. It's like this guy is now affecting people that she calls part of her family.
Yeah, you know? It really spoke to me that she did what Bruce couldn't do. Because at the same time, it really shows, you know how we often say that we see Batman in the way David Mazur plays Bruce? There are those little moments. In that particular moment, I saw Catwoman. I didn't see young Selina Kyle. I saw Catwoman. Because Catwoman had always had this confidence about her, no matter what incarnation. And she always did terrible things, but because she needed to do them to accomplish something she wanted. And right now, she's at this stage where she has this little thing that she wants to protect because she likes Bruce. She might not feel the same way about Alfred. I don't think she even cares about Alfred. But she cares about Bruce.
I think she cares about Alfred because she knows Bruce cares about Alfred.
Yeah, that's it. And watching her push Reg, it was like, oh yeah, Catwoman is in the building. She's not going anywhere. I loved it. Really, really powerful moment. For something, you know, it's another step that Bruce had to take. Because at some point, he's going to have to learn to do terrible things to accomplish his goals, you know. But I like how he's not there yet. He's not ready. And even though he realizes that some terrible things have to be done, he can't do them yet. And it's a good thing that he has people like Kat and like Alfred who will be able to do those things to keep him safe and to give him time to grow into this legend that he has to become.
Well, you know, with all the disappointment that I was saying I had in the episode, actually the part of the show that had me looking forward to the next few episodes was the Bruce and Kat part, because Reg has told Bruce who's against him. Bruce now knows what's happening. And, you know, just like several episodes, we were talking about how Fish was playing one game and not the game she needed to play. Bruce is now going to be playing the game he needs to play. And that part is intriguing for me, again, because his allies are a fellow, you know, young teen, a man who has been stabbed, and a cop who's not there that much.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting...
Who has his own problems.
Exactly. It's going to be an interesting dynamic now that he knows that it's Wayne Enterprises. His own, you know, his own family, corporate family, but that's who's trying to get him. And so I think that's going to be an intriguing part. I hope. I hope, I hope, I hope. And I hope it does bring Bruce and Jim together a little bit more again. Maybe not just over sandwiches and coasters for your drinks, but in some way, shape, or form. Okay, so let's move into Jim and the crime. I don't think we got as much on Jim that really wasn't related to the crime. I like that one part where the young cop comes up to him and basically boosts his ego. And we find out in the end, hey, guess what? We knew we were going for that ego boost with you. We knew you'd fall for this.
Yeah.
What did you think of that whole
ploy
to get him in?
First of all, the moment the young cop showed up, I was torn between two different reactions. Because part of me was a little excited because... the first thing that came to my mind was, is this the beginning of the new guard? Like, is this the beginning of Jim forming his, you know, inner circle, so to speak? Like, young cops who's going to be the future of Gotham PD and everything. But the moment I thought that, this nagging feeling just... appeared, because come on, this cannot be it. As much as I would want it to be it, and oh my god, this is happening, it's like, Jim, were you born yesterday? When have ever there been a cop as honest as you? You know, aside from Montoya and Alan, but they've been missing for ages, so they don't count.
Yeah.
But it's like, this cannot be it. I mean, come on. I was so suspicious. I had this bad feeling that I couldn't, you know, put my finger on it. I didn't know what was wrong, but I knew something was wrong. Because there was no way I was getting my inner circle future cops of GCPD. So I was like, I'm watching it. And I'm suspicious, but I'll let it play out. What about you?
Well, I think that's, though, what they were kind of hoping. Because first off, you know, your heart is black and cold.
Yeah.
So you becoming suspicious is...
I'm suspicious of bunnies.
Jim is still pure. Jim is still pure and ever hopeful. So he fell for it until the end. You know, when we find out, I have to admit, I love those scenes. When he finds out it's Loeb, the commissioner, because we need to bring the commissioner down. But the fact that the commissioner has figured out that, you know, Jim does want, he does have this bit of him that wants that limelight, that wants that recognition, that wants to not be this lone cop. And he found a way to play on it. That was really wonderful. And seeing Jim at the end, as he's confronting the commissioner, you know, it's, I loved it. It's, I just thought it was great to see this almost scary side of Jim.
Yeah.
That made sense. I really liked it.
Well, I enjoyed it because, his, trademarked phase of righteous indignation made an appearance, and I love Jim and he's, you know, righteous and, oh, you know, fire, brimstone and everything. And the bad people will burn.
Mm-hmm.
And we will punish them. But I have to say that that final confrontation wasn't actually my favorite part of it, because part of the case, so to speak. Because I did enjoy, I thought I would enjoy Bullock. And his Jim, let's not do the thing. Fine, I will do the thing with you. I thought I would enjoy Bullock's charm and, you know, his need to protect Jim and, hey, Jim, let's not do this. I have years on the service. I know better. Fine, I will do what Jim wants because he's my partner. I love when Bullock has this, you know, monologue that just illustrates the way I feel about the case very often. And I thought this would once again be my favorite part of the case, but what I actually enjoyed the most, much to my own surprise, were the flashbacks.
Well, let's get into that in just a second, because I want to, since you brought up Bullock, I actually like the fact, though, that Bullock really seems scared.
Yeah.
If you don't drop it, the blood on your hands could be Lee. You know what Loeb could do. Bullock looked scared. Not just because he's, you know, I've got this comfortable life that you're about to mess with, like we've seen in the past. And not just like, well, okay, we're going to go arrest Falcone. Well, death, you know, I'm going to die tomorrow, so let's live it up tonight. He actually seemed genuinely terrified and scared because it wasn't somebody he knew that was going to take him down. It was this unknown. I mean, he wasn't even as scared. He hasn't been as scared since Spirit of the Goat. And I don't think that even scared him as much as the ogre does. And so I did like seeing Bullock scared.
I think what he was scared of wasn't that he's going to lose his life. Like, there was an option so many times. I think that doesn't scare him.
Yeah.
I think what does scare him was innocent people dying because of what he's done. Like, innocent people will die if Jim doesn't back off. And I think part of that fear is also amplified because he has seen it in the past. He has seen a number of cops lose their loved ones to this ogre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have, like, Leslie even talking about, you know, that when she looks at what the guy had done to Grace Fairchild, the case that the cop brought up, she says he's a monster. Even the look on her face, the person that committed this act is a monster. This is not a person. This is not a Falcone, a Maroney, a something that you can rationalize or think about. And, you know, like you said, it's this unknown that could kill really innocent people, that can do horrid and monstrous things. Mm. Speaking of those horrid and monstrous things, when they lean into it, since you brought it up, they go and investigate, and Jim and Bullock go to this bar, and they talk to the speakeasy that Leslie turns them on to. And I'm like, really? Speakeasy? Do we really have those? I haven't heard of speakeasies since the 20s of Prohibition. they go in there and talk to a bartender and ask if they've seen this girl or who she's with, and she starts talking and we go into the flashbacks. So I'm gonna let you talk about the flashbacks first.
I don't like flashbacks. I really don't, and it has to be a really good flashback for me to pay attention, which has been a problem in Arrow season 1 when I skipped the majority of flashbacks and then suddenly they were fighting on a boat and I didn't know how we got there. But I have a problem with flashbacks because I always think that they are an easy way out for writers to give you backstory without talking about it, right? Without talking about the character's past. Well, here, have a flashback. And I've always had problems with it, and I rarely enjoy them, which is why I was so surprised when by the end of the episode I realized that the flashbacks were the parts which I enjoyed the most. Because I thought that we would be done with the crime of the week in this episode. Because I honestly didn't pay attention as to who was supposed to be the the big bad in this episode, and I had no idea how many episodes the story arc was supposed to be. I just went in, I watched it because you reminded me that Gotham is on. So I came in with the assumption that it will be a one episode deal, you know, but then the flashback started, and instead of them solving and catching the guy, we got this insight into how he operates and the way he, you know, catches the victim and how things are and how they develop and quickly end in bloody murder. And this kind of got me excited to see what happens next. And part of me is afraid to get too excited because it's going to end like Gruber and Lovecraft and Crane and every single villain we've had in the past that had a great, intense lead-up and, you know, a solution that was kind of anticlimactic and disappointing.
A plus on that is all the past ones were two episodes. This is supposed to be a major multi-episode recurring arc. So not a two-episode. Here's Dr. Crane and then here's the Scarecrow. It's supposed to be major. This is quote from the press release. Major multi-episode reoccurring arc.
Okay, so is it a four-episode arc? And they're going to end with a season finale? I don't know. I'm, like I said, I don't want to be...
That would still be better than what we've had.
I don't want to get my hopes up about the way Milo, you know, played it. I love the way he played a psychopath. He looked and felt like, okay, this is what 50 Shades of Grey would look like if it was realistic. Yeah.
That's what I wrote down too, was 50 Shades. Yeah, especially compared to knowing him from Gilmore Girls and Heroes. This was a bit of a departure from what I immediately associated him with. So
you can say so. You might say so. It's slightly different tone than Gilmore Girls. Then again, you know,
slightly.
Alexis Bledel went on to star in Sin City, so apparently everybody who starred in Gilmore Girls goes into this dark, dark turn. I don't know. I'm looking forward to see what Lauren Graham is up to next, if that pattern continues.
So you like the flashbacks, even though you're a girl who does not generally like flashbacks, you liked them.
The insight they gave us. And I am excited, not too excited, you know, I'm trying to control myself, but I'm excited about this particular villain. So they accomplished what they set out to do. You know, good job.
Okay, well, I'm on the opposite side, because I generally am fine with flashbacks if they're done right. These bothered me because they set it up where Bullock and Jim are talking to this bartender and she starts talking about this, and then we get a flashback that would be so much more than the bartender would know. So she's not flashing back to what she knows, but they set it up that it is. And later when Lise and Jim are talking, there's no other trauma on this body. We get a flashback to what's happening there. If they had been doing this all season, that this is what the characters, Jim and everybody else, are going through, and then we see
what happened.
These flashbacks or something that happened. So it's just like, this is just in the know for you. But they didn't set it up that way. They really made it in the editing and the way the present day dialogue and such was going, that it was almost like what they were telling them. I would rather have seen, quite honestly, these scenes not as flashbacks, but let's set up Peter Petrelli. I know it's not his character's name is Jason, but I'd rather have seen them several episodes ago as we have this scene, like set him up really early and have this be a month ago, which is when this was supposed to, or more ago. And we just have this scene that's in there. And it's like, why is it? Well, that's intriguing. You know, maybe Jim and Barbara are out at a restaurant and he happens to be there with that girl, or meets at a bar or something. I would rather have seen them as present day or something, or have Jason, have it be Jason's flashbacks. These did not make sense to me. I like the insight, but the way it was presented, it was a wink and a nod to the audience, but they haven't been formatting the show that way this whole season. It almost felt like there was this TV show on last year, a couple years ago, where it was a crime show and you knew who the murderer was. And then the whole rest of the episode were the cops investigating the murder and trying to prove that it was this person. You saw the murder and the murderer at the beginning. And so the audience through the whole time knew who the murderer was while the cops mm-hmm. didn't. And that's what it felt like, was here's the wink to the audience. But it really didn't fit. I mean, even when we get to Ed finds that broken heart picture evidence and Bullock suddenly knows, and we have another flashbook of back of the overcooked lamb and the corrupt, and her being handcuffed and all this. I mean, all the flashbacks just seem to really, it's like we need to set up this baddie and show how bad he is. But we didn't set it up episodes ago. And this is all stuff that happened a month ago. So how do we put this information in there? I like the information. I don't like how it was presented.
I think the problem that they ran into on the production side was that they got the extended season. And plus they cast mm-hmm. who they cast as the big bad. And now they want to get their money's worth. So they're making, changing the structure of the episode from what they used the entire season. Doing something new so they can use the actor more. Because otherwise, if they didn't give us flashbacks, we would end up with another Crane and Gruber and everything, because the only point of view that we would get would be that of Jim's, that of Bullock's, that of Lee's, mm-hmm. And the only chance for us to see any more of the guy would be if he kidnapped a female character we've already met, which is another thing.
We know from some production stills we're going to be having some interactions there with him and Barbara. So that's how Barbara's coming back.
Yeah, but they would have Yay. To. They would. Oh yeah. Oh joy, and have this character with great potential get victimized, because why not? She's already pointless. But that's my mean little black heart. It's sarcastic and already disillusioned. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's like what they want. They want what they want, the writers and the producers, and then they make the show and the structure they're already established bend to what they want. And good storytelling doesn't work like that. I still enjoyed the flashbacks because I did. But
like I said, see your point. I like what we learned. I don't like how it was presented. It took me out of, it doesn't match anything about the flow of the show today. If the show flow had been that way this whole time, I think it would be great. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's why Penguin keeps falling backwards. Because, like you said, they're dealing with what they have right now. Okay, we have to introduce this Jason Lennon character. But he's done all these things that are horrid 6 months ago, a month ago.
And he wasn't cast yet.
How do we do this? Well, let's do it in a flashback.
I don't know.
So I didn't like that. Something else I don't like, there's two more things I don't like, but I am excited about him being on there because he does seem like a genuinely evil bad guy mm-hmm. that this could be very well. And the fact that they're saying a major multi-episode reoccurring arc. I'm like, okay, like you said, it's not going to be a two off. One of the things is, they're calling him the ogre, and the ogre is actually a historical canon character, but these are not the same ogres. One is a genetically augmented man with the strength of an ape, and our ogre is just a normal guy who is obsessed and psychopathic, like you said. It's the psychopathic 50 Shades of Grey.
Explain something to me.
Really? You couldn't come up with another name?
This is something I need a little insight from an American, because they did not explain why they are calling him the ogre.
Exactly.
And am I missing something because I'm not American? Does this make sense when you're American? Because it doesn't make sense to me. Why are they calling him the ogre?
I mean, I don't know. Because what he does is ugly and ogres are supposed to be ugly? I don't know. Doesn't make sense. I don't know. It just, the ogre, it doesn't scare me. Maybe it's because of the Shrek movies. I don't know. But if you have this horrendous psycho serial killer, really? That's the name you're going to come up with there? You know?
It's not catchy.
3XK from Castle is much scarier than the ogre.
Yeah.
And that's a good scary serial killer there. I would rather him not have a name. Like, maybe he's so scary, we don't have a name for him.
He who shall not be named. That's scary.
Yeah, exactly. Be like a Voldemort kind of thing. Uh-oh, the Death Eaters are after me. The other thing with that, actually, there's two other things. It's like the Spanish Inquisition.
It's coming back.
Is that there's, thank you for laughing at that. There is speculation that he could be, well, actually, I'm going to come back to that one. There's something that Milo actually said that bothers me. Gosh, I don't know which one of these two to talk about first.
Pick one.
So there's speculation out there that the ogre and Milo, the way they're setting him up, is the Joker. So that's another one of the theories that's going around there, which I then go, isn't the Joker supposed to be older but still fairly contemporary? I mean, except for the Jack Nicholson thing, but even then, he and Michael Keaton weren't really that far off age-wise. It's not like grandpa and grandson kind of thing. But we had that in the premiere, the comic that was up there. We had Jerome in The Blind Fortune Teller, who maybe was a little too spot on, but was really spot on. Are we just so desperate for Joker and the potential of Joker that anybody that's super bad, super evil, could be the Joker? Do you see any chance that this guy is the Joker?
I don't want him to be. Because, frankly, if this show cannot stand on its own 2 feet without Joker, then it's not good enough. Because Joker is like this... it seems to me that Joker is this mystical unicorn that everybody wants to see all the time, but the idea of it is more appealing than actually seeing it on screen. Because if he shows up in Gotham, for me, it's going to be a major letdown. Because Joker is this big Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people write sonnets about him. Basically, he's so huge, there is no bigger villain than Joker. And the entire first season of Gotham is like, is this a Joker? Is this the Joker? Is this the Joker? Like, come on! Are we this desperate that we cannot come up with a single original plot that isn't about the Joker? Like, let Bruce grow up and face the Joker. And I don't care who the Joker is right now.
The way they keep teasing things is, and they've been doing this all season, like the whole Dick Grayson seeing Robin in utero, basically, was just like, really? Couldn't that have been like, I wouldn't have minded that if it had been revealed kind of like you're watching the episode and then at the end it's like, oh, but they were actually promoting it that way. And it was driving me crazy. There's speculation. Heller has said that in a recent claim that Gotham will kick off their Joker storyline before the closing of season one, which is why some fans are saying that maybe Milo, Jason Lennon, the ogre, the Joker could be that he's the Joker. And I'm like, really? I mean, if you're telegraphing it that much, I don't care. It's going to be like Fish. Now I know Fish is going to die. I don't care. And I hate saying that about that. And so I'm like, really? I don't know. It bothers me. Do you have to telegraph everything? Can something be a surprise? If he really is going to be the Joker?
Don't you want to hide it?
Why did you tell us?
Yeah. Don't you want to keep it a secret? Like a big major secret that doesn't get revealed until you watch the episode? It's like, every time I hear speculation like that, I feel the need to go on Tumblr and find the gif of Jon Stewart saying, exactly. I give up.
Well, it's like...
Because I give up.
It's like Gotham creators have this thing of like, I know something you don't know, but I want to tell you, so I'm going to just keep hinting. And it's like, no, just don't know something. Don't tell me anything. Don't hint at it. It's kind of like when people with the Crying Game was like, well, and there's a twist at the end. And I'm like, great, I already know what it is now because you told me there's a twist. I figured it out. You know, it's like, stop telling me these. Just let trust your story to evolve and grow on its own without... Guess what's coming? We're going to introduce the Joker storyline. This bothers me. And I have to admit, I really liked, what was his name? Cameron Monaghan, who played Jerome. I liked, if the Joker's going to be introduced, I actually liked the way he did it because that's the Joker I want to see. And I like the fact that he had these multiple sides. And actually, in all the discussion I can find online, everybody seems to be forgetting about him. They all talk about Penguin being the Joker, which I think is ludicrous, and and Jason Lennon now being the Joker. They keep forgetting about Jerome.
Yeah, everybody's a Joker. Like, you tell a bad punchline and you're the Joker.
Exactly. It's like a game of Clue. You know, we're all just going, it was the Joker in the library with a candlestick. And I was just like, everybody's a Joker. It's just a game of Clue. Okay, the final thing I want to talk about, and here will be a final, this is the one I was kind of teasing earlier. This will be the kind of final rant. Sorry, people, this is a ranty episode of Chicks. I really thought this was going to be a very short episode, but we're both ranting.
Nope.
So Milo did say, this is a quote from him, in a recent phone interview, that he was drawn to the role of Jason Lennon / the Ogre / ? For one, because Bruno Heller, the creator of Gotham, quote unquote, makes great male characters. They're strong. They have a purpose and a direction. I identify with what I am. I'm a man and I want to play a great male character. Thank God for guys like Heller or TV producer Kurt Sutter, who give us these great characters for actors to play with. These great male characters.
Here's the thing, Heather. When you edit this podcast, do not edit out the long, awkward silence.
I'm not.
Because I feel like it's going to illustrate perfectly the way we feel about that particular line. Because, of course, they write great male characters. 80% of their cast is male. And it's just... Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, how mean can I be?
As long as you're PG-13, go for it.
Okay. Dear Milo, you're probably not listening to it, which probably better for you. But of course you're grateful to the writers and producers of Gotham and Sons of Anarchy. Because male characters are so difficult to find. It's so hard to find a good, complex, strong male character nowadays. I mean, I have no idea how long you had to wait for a good male character to show up so you could play him. You know, bite me. I'm sorry, I'm not... We shouldn't have ended on this note, because we're going to finish recording this, and I'm going to be all buzzed up and angry and frustrated, and I will have to watch, like, My Little Pony or something to get calm down, you know, calm again, and be able to sleep and not have nightmares about male actors saying how difficult their life is because they have so few complex male characters that they can play.
Now, after this, you're going to go watch Outlander, and you'll feel a little bit better.
Yeah, probably.
You'll feel a little bit better.
But that's not PG-13.
No, that's not PG-13 at all. The thing I find interesting is him saying that. And I'm not knocking him because he's an actor who's looking for a great role. But the fact that this actor looking for a great role calls out these two guys for writing great male characters, not great characters, great male characters, to me highlights the fact that in the coming episodes, when we see Jason Lennon and Barbara King together, it's going to highlight even more the great male character on screen and the weak female character. And that... Mm. Unless the writers really go leaps and bounds with her character, Erin Richards will have been wasted this season. She will have had two or three great episodes at the beginning with potential, and we're going to lose Fish. We're going to not see Montoya or barely see Montoya. Barbara's going to be the damsel in distress. When what I see us coming out of in Gotham with great female characters being Kat and Ivy and Leslie, that's all we got. I'm not happy.
Not happy. That's an understatement of the year. I can't even say how much I'm angry with this show. I was so excited about it. And I wanted to see what they would do with the characters that they announced. But of course it ended up being, you know, the guys and the women who are there. And by the end of this season, I don't think I will be able to count to two the number of female characters who were important enough that plot would actually change if they weren't in the scene.
Kat.
You know, the sexy lamp test. It's like, if you can exchange a female character with a lamp and nothing about the plot changes, to quote Arrow, you have failed this city.
Right now, Kat is the only one that I see as having the potential to actually do that. But we'll see. We have 3 more episodes left in season 1. We will be back next week to talk about episode 20, Under the Knife, which is followed by The Anvil or the Hammer, and the season finale, All Happy Families Are Alike. We will reserve final judgment. We're not going to say like we do on Sleepy Hollow, where we trust the writers. We are going to give you 3 more chances. Don't disappoint us, to quote Alex.
Yeah.
You know,
to go watch something that's actually, you know, with good female characters.
With that, listeners, thank you for hanging on to this long-winded rant here, because this is a long one.
This is sorry. One
of our long ones. I don't know how we did this.
I feel like we should be sorry for ranting so much.
If you have an opinion about Jason Lennon and the ogre and the female characters and all sorts of things, we would love to hear it. You can email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. You can, of course, give us a call on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCIFI. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at @scififorchicks. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice, Sci-Fi for Chicks, so you can hear all of our different podcasts like iZombie and Orphan Black, which is coming back. And that's one that you won't have as many rants on like you do about them. Yeah. So if you want to hear us be a little happier and more positive and less ranty, tune into that one. Or even iZombie, but more so Orphan Black is less ranty and more yay!
Gushy, yeah.
Thank you, Alex, for sticking through this rant with me. I'm sorry I brought it down for you. You were actually much more positive about the episode until I started talking.
Yeah, now we know what's the problem. You talking, not the episode at all.
You're not the first person to say that. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.